Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Neil Ward, and I'm grateful that you are taking time out of your day to learn more about design educators' paths to tenure. I truly appreciate it. On this episode of Tell It to Neil, we are chatting with Associate Professor of Graphic Design, Archana Shikara from Illinois State University in Normal, Illinois. Let's listen in. Hi, Archana. Thank you for being on Tell It to Neil.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing? Thanks for inviting me.
Of course, I'm doing well. And let's get right into it. How did you get into graphic design?
Graphic design. So I have a BFA in painting from State University of New York in New Paltz. As I was taking my BFA classes, I had to take tons of art history classes. So while studying the 20th century art, I came across Theo van Doesburg, and I was totally fascinated by his typographic experimentation. I like the math behind it. Kind of sounds like as though I'm a nerd, but I really enjoyed studying Theo van Doesburg's designs. So, and then I wanted to try them, although I was afraid of sitting in front of a machine to draw it because it was a different medium. So I was used to drawing with charcoal and pastels and paint. And so for me, letter forms have volume and I cannot see it flat. So that's what brought me into graphic design.
Talk a little bit more about that idea of letter forms have dimension to them.
Yeah. So while taking painting, we had to take sculpture class. And then so you look at like three-dimensional work. And then so, and because you paint and everything is 2D, but then you're imagining the three-dimensional aspect on a 2D surface, right? When you're drawing or painting. So then when I look at letter forms, I kind of imagine that they have volume and then the negative space becomes more powerful than the positive space. So I find the negative space more exciting than actually the positive space, because that's what I believe gives a power to design, the negative space.
And that is definitely nerding out on typography. I love it. So then you got into design rather kind of later in life. So it wasn't a childhood want to do it, which is really fascinating.
No, not really. I mean, I did not know anything about graphic design. As a child, I was fascinated by painting. So I used to paint all the time. I was a huge collector. I would collect stamps. And I was a big reader of comic books back home in India. There's this comic book series called Amar Chitra Katha. So I would read them all. And then I would be fascinated and I would try to draw them and like all of the characters. But really, I didn't know anything about graphic design. So after like this fascination with Theo van Doesburg and wanted to do and understand what design was all about, I registered for a graphic design class. And I remember the first day of class, my professor asked me to draw this one animal icon. And she said, oh, use your markers or your a technical pen or something. And I went up to her and saying, I've never drawn with markers before, so I have no idea how to be so tight in a sketchbook. I'm used to drawing with charcoal. And she said, okay, why don't you draw with that? So then I used compressed charcoal to draw these, make these marks. But then, and then after that, the second day of class, I came back and refined them using tracing paper. And then she looked at it and then she said, you're a designer. And then I was like, no, I'm a painter. I like drawing, you know. And she said, no, you're a designer. And I kind of took it to heart and I never looked back. And I've been a designer since then. So this is like 24 years ago.
I love that story. And the interesting part of it is that you were surrounded by amazing graphic design with stamps and comic books.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I had no idea that a designer had designed them, right? I mean, it's just like you just take it for granted. You don't understand the science behind design. You don't understand the value of design because I was never aware of it, never thought about it. So I thought some painter does this, someone puts this together. So I did not understand the the value or the professional idea of graphic design. I had no idea when I was in India. And even now, my parents who live in India, they don't understand what I'm doing. So when I tell them, but they know that I'm a professor of graphic design. So they're very happy and they're like, oh, she's a professor at the university. But I don't think they understand what graphic design is all about, which takes even like many people even now don't understand what graphic design is all about. Right. I mean, they're like, oh, so you get paid for that? You go to school for 4 years for that or get a master's degree in design? But as I can just open up Microsoft Word and design something in 10 minutes and you have to go to school, right? I mean, people ask you these questions, so.
Yes, they do. They do. So then did you switch majors when you were in undergrad or did you wind up going to graduate school in graphic design?
No, what happened was... I have a BFA in painting and drawing and then moved here to Normal, Illinois, and lived in town, took a first class at ISU, actually. And Julie Johnson was that professor who kind of guided me to go towards design. And she was the one who looked at my designs and she said, you're a designer. And then she was a great mentor to me. And so then I took a few graphic design classes and then applied for an internship in town, there was an ad agency in town at that time. Again, I'm talking about 24 years ago, called CSNA Advertising. So I applied and then I got a summer internship and they liked my work. And then they said, do you want to come back and work for us full time? So I had done about maybe 3 classes of graphic design along with typography. Curriculum was very different back then. And Julie said, why don't you do it? Because I think you will learn a lot in working in the profession because you already have ideas. You already have a degree. So all of the design work, all of the professional work I've done and the knowledge that I've gained is through client-based work. So then after working in the industry for about 12 years or so, I worked for several institutions and also clients and graphic design studios and things like that. And then I decided I want to go to graduate school and kind of understand cultural identity because I noticed that... me being an Asian, an Indian American, I have seen like lots of stereotyping happening and also marginalization. As a person of color, I started to look at the stuff differently. And I was sick and tired of downloading images from Getty or all these stock images just for companies who wanted to show diversity in their campaign materials. I was really tired of doing that. And I'm like, is this right? Is this how we live life? I mean, we need to really talk about this. So I decided I need to go to graduate school to really understand what cultural identity means. And who am I as a designer? So I wanted to really give a lot of thought to this and then decided to go to graduate school and get and really understand kind of deeply about design. And I was really fortunate to meet Professor Jennifer Gunji, who was the chair of the design program at University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, because her thesis work and her research work is in graphic design and the tea ceremony. So when I started talking about identity and cultural identity specifically, she immediately understood what I was talking about, because not many people understand or now people are talking about it, but 12 years ago it was completely new. And so then she understood it, and then I was really fortunate to work with her under her guidance and then develop all these thesis material. And so my thesis was on graphic design in India and how we see design through our 6 senses. So the 6th sense being the mind. So it was more like very philosophical and then spiritual and then also like experiential, where you experience design through all of your senses. That was a long.
I would love to see that show.
That was a long answer, wasn't it?
No, that was the perfect answer, actually.
Yeah.
Which, and that show, do you, can you talk a little bit about that thesis? I mean, well, did you have a show?
Yes, or was absolutely. It more... No, okay. I had a show. The show was called Tanumana. So I took, I wanted to really, because since I'm from India, lived in the country for 19 years, and then lived in the United States. I've been living in the United States since 1991. So almost close to three decades. But now as a graduate student, again, it was almost 12 years ago. So I really wanted to look at Indian graphic design and see what, how design could be understood as, like if you go and start designing for a different country, it's so easy to stereotype, go to Google, go to Wikipedia, or go to whatever websites and then try to understand and be like, okay, if I'm doing design for India, so maybe I understand that people wear vibrant clothing, lots of bold colors and people are loud maybe, and then they perhaps think about Festival of Lights or Holi, the Festival of Colors, and all these things that people are like, you know, people just kind of see it and believe it. And really, there is no deeper meaning and understanding. And then, of course, henna is so popular. So people look at these designs and try to do something intricate, or look at mandala design and be like, okay, I need to recreate a mandala or something. So again, really doesn't mean anything, right? I mean, it just comes out to be so superficial and artificial and not authentic or honest or true. So I was very deeply interested in coming out to be like, okay, if I have to study a culture, what do I need to do? So I visited India, not as a person who lived there, but as a person looking at India or my own hometown through a different cultural lens, right? And then try to understand the how do we, like when I looked at Indian design, it's very deep, and India has such a rich history. And then you look at all the nine Navarasas, we call it, like the nine rasas. So each rasa has a color, and then it has like, if it's an emotions, rasas are emotions. So every emotion has a color and a depiction. I also do classical Indian dance, so I could enact that emotion through dance. But then how do we understand that through design, right? So I kind of researched on that as well. But it seems so complicated for a person who does not understand Indian culture or history, then that seems very complicated and deep and hard. So then I was like, how do I make this, I'm not saying easy, but at least for people to understand who are not as familiar, so it does not overwhelm the audience, right? Or a researcher who's doing the study of design or for a project. So then I came about and like, okay, how do I simplify the whole thing? So I looked at Indian food. And then I also looked at Indian clothing. Then I looked at space and art, right? So my show was called Tanumana. Tanu means body. Mana means mind. So Tanumana was a show where I kind of took two walls that were 12 by 12 feet. And I painted both the walls gold because gold is a revered metal in India. So it had gold paint, and one of the walls depicted Indian food. So the way I organized was, in the beginning, the space was very organized and it kind of depicted the Vastu Shastra or the temple architecture, like how we build homes, right? There is a science to it. So it kind of depended on that. And then the some of the foods were in the middle were sattvic food. So that's the food where it evokes spirituality in a person, what to eat and what not to eat. So there is sattvic food, tamasic food, and rajasic food. So like the whole entire wall was covered with images of food. So maybe I had about 300 or 400 images or something on the wall following the grid system, and there were places that it broke the grid system as well. And I also wanted people to be able to touch some of the spices. So then it was, so it's an interactive show. And then on one of the wall, because we Indians eat with our hands, so there was a video that was playing like how we mix food with our hands and how the food energizes our body through our fingertips, right? Because because the food is very sensual, right? Because when we mix, it's something happens to our body. We salivate as we see food, right? And then there was also another video. There was a poster that depicted about all these explanations about how sattvic food, rajasic food, and some of the food. Like when you look at Indian food, when you go to an Indian restaurant, right? Because the food perhaps may not be presented in a very exotic, special kind of manner. But when you taste it, it feels very comforting, right? It feels very good and wholesome. The spices and then the rice and all these dishes kind of make you feel good from the inside. Right, so the poster kind of depicted
that.
The poster depicted that. So that was one wall. The second wall was about body wear. So it did not have a formal grid system, but it was very organic. Because, and I think it's to understand a culture. If you look at food, if you look at its plating, you look at the ingredients. So it's very. It's like the first way to understand a culture. You go to a restaurant, you experience that food. Then that's an introduction to a culture, right? Through food. So, and food is something that brings people together, right? When you break bread with everyone, it just brings everybody together. You're happy, you feel good, you can make a conversation and things like that. So then the second wall was about body wear. So it was filled with designs from like saris and the hair, what we put for our hair, all of the ornamentation, jewelry, and things like that. So the whole wall was that. And then it also had a video of like, because when you walk in the streets of India, it's a little crowded. You can see people honking. You can hear people honking. People are walking by so fast. And then there are hawkers, vendors calling out to you to come buy their stuff, right? And everything's so colorful. You raise your head above and there's things everywhere on top. And it's just like, it's so busy, and I wanted to kind of recreate that. So that's why there were sounds, and then the sounds of like most of Indian women talking and be like, okay, how can I be westernized? What do I look at? So it was all about culture. And again, the show was mostly based on like me living in America and then looking at India as a culture, right? So that's what I... So otherwise, if I'm an Indian based in India, then the show was going to be very differently presented. But this show was for a Western audience, right? So who is not as familiar with Indian culture. Again, the most of the Indian culture that you get is perhaps maybe if you have friends or otherwise through Indian food, right? So it was body wear. And then... And then the whole space was kind of depicted through all of the rangoli designs that we see. Rangolis are painted on the floor at an entrance to a temple or a home. So it's like, so when you walk in, you see it's very welcoming and to ward off all of the evil. And then you want to welcome people in. So because we believe like a guest is God, right? So when a guest comes to your house, so it's like as though the God is coming to your house. So you have that kind of an affection and respect to your guest or to your teachers or whatever that is. So I wanted to kind of capture all these emotions into the design. And the walls were kind of placed in only like, they were only 4 feet apart. So you feel like as though you're walking in this narrow alley and then you're seeing all these things. So it was pretty interactive. Boy, again, a long answer.
Wow, yes, and very immersive too. Just as you're describing it, I find myself walking through it.
Oh, good. Good.
So I guess I've got two follow-up questions
sure.
to that, and one kind of has to wait for the other, but yeah, so after you graduated, or maybe it was before, but when was the aha moment that you thought, you know what, design education might be for me?
So it was like, again, I've been very fortunate to have amazing teachers who have inspired and nurtured me to grow as a person. And in my Vedic culture, most people are familiar with the word Hindu, right? So in Hindu culture,
what was that word?
Vedic. It's V-E-D-I-C. So that's actually the true name for our culture. Hindu was the word that was given by Persians when they came to India, and Hinduism or the Hindu Kush, the range of mountains, the Hindu Kush mountains. So, and all of a sudden it was like, okay, the people who live on the other side of the Hindu Kush mountains, they're all Hindus. So it's kind of very geographic. That's how it's named as. So the Hindu actually does not have any meaning to it. So the right word is Vedic, right? So in our Vedic culture, teaching is the highest form of giving. And I always wanted to be an educator since I was a kid. And I thought that this was the best way to share what I've learned in life through design with my students. So that's why I wanted to be an educator.
Interesting. So you knew that part for a very long time. It was just the graphic design component came later.
Yes, exactly. 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 I didn't know what I wanted to teach, but I wanted to teach.
Well, and you have such a rich body of knowledge, especially with your thesis show, and everything that you've talked about are all the basic principles of graphic design from color and space and human interaction, human needs, culture, cultural identity, like all of that is wrapped into this idea of graphic design.
Yes, absolutely.
So my next question is, how did that body of knowledge, the cultural identity, how did that translate into your teaching and into your scholarship?
So, now I have to think, right? I have to think because since I've been working on it for the past 12 years. So even my thesis work, I was very fortunate to work with Professor Jennifer Gunji. And then I was also a teaching assistant at Japan House at UIUC. Professor Kimiko Gunji was the director of Japan House at that time. And I took a class with her in a class of Japanese flower arrangement called Ikebana. And then I realized that it was nothing but three-dimensional graphic design, because you have to look at line, shape, color, form, and how many leaves, should I cut a leaf, should I do this, so it's like you have to look at lots of things, right, and goes in threes in terms of composition. And then I also was her TA for Chado, that's Japanese tea ceremony. So I worked with her for a whole year, and I observed her teaching, how she comes across, how she teaches Japanese culture to students who are completely oblivious of any Asian culture, right? Again, Asian culture is so stereotyped. You go to Target, you see these bamboo plants, and then you think, let me be a little eclectic and then you buy these bamboo plants, bring them home, and be like, okay, I'm cultured or whatever. Or otherwise, you're like, okay, I'm going to eat this Korean food today, and I'm going to go here, I'm going to do this. Again, not really thinking about what this food means to that culture, right? So really not having a deeper understanding, but that then again very superficial in terms of knowledge. So I observed how she taught and how she came across as an educator, and how students were completely energized, and because she was planting a seed. She was planting a seed to students to understand not only about Japanese art and aesthetics, but to understand who we are as people, right? And I thought that was really, really important, because I feel like graphic design, Like, for me, design is a philosophy of life in which designers have to empathize with and respect with the diverse communities of people we serve. So I've come to understand the power of design and its impact it has on a larger community, right? So I feel like, again, working as a designer for that many years, I really understood at that moment, taking classes with her, that design is not about creating pretty pictures, right? Satisfying the client or one's ego. And it's more than that. So how can we really change the world through design? So I always used to question myself about this and then be like, okay, I need to be the change, right? So
yes.
So I really found myself breathing, eating, and thinking about design. But then, and also, like, you know, and I love to cook. So I love to travel and experience new things, and I'm constantly thinking about process and color, arrangement, space, texture, and how it affects all of my six senses. But sometimes I also find it as a limitation because I want to experience life as it comes, just to absorb with no judgment. Because you're, as a designer, you're always judging, right? And I don't want to.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, and I don't want to judge. I just want to kind of absorb everything, so which is really, really difficult. So doing all these things and then being a keen observer. So then I brought that into my teaching. I got a chance to teach or be a lecturer as a MFA student, and then taught this one class on identity, on cultural identity to freshman students. And that really went well. There was a small exhibition after that. So then I was learning how to teach it, right? It was very tough because like 12 years ago, there was no book written about it. There's no examples about anything. So all of the projects that I'm creating at ISU, and then I started experimenting here at Illinois State. And I was so glad the director at that time was very encouraging. And then he said, do whatever you want but make it work, right? So then I started teaching special topics in design with a focus on cultural identity, and then started experimenting and with all these projects that's kind of never done before in design, and then started attending conferences and then
Ooh,
presenting.
Can you talk about some of those projects?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the first project was about again, food. So it's like, so of course, food makes us happy. Food thing, we look at food and then it brings memories, right? Then food talks about culture, talks about heritage. We talk about so many things through food. So I asked students to look at their ancestral country or origin and then talk to their parents and then come back with these answers. I have a list of questions that they have to kind of follow and do research. So it's not just through the internet, right? Not just on the hop on the computer and then just go da-da-da-da-da and then it's done. So it's not that. So I want a conversation that they need to have with their grandparents or with their parents and then talk about a culture, find a country. Because, I mean, I tell them, hey, guys, some students are like, oh, I'm half this, I'm this and this. So they have like two or three ancestral country of origin. And then so I'm like, oh gosh, you guys are so so lucky. And here I'm like, if anybody asks me, where are you from? And I have to say India. So I just have like so boring, only like one country to choose from, right? Even though it's exciting, I love India. But then you have a choice. So let's look at one country, really understand its roots and heritage and culture and language and all these things, and then come up with a food that people look at that food as perhaps a national identity. I don't know. And or perhaps that's the food that you ate while you grew up, but you never knew that your grandma was making this food and there's all this history behind it. So let's talk about that. So then students do an information design kind of project on that. And then, so after that, then we talk about stereotyping and marginalization. So like, how is this culture or group marginalized? So how do we look at this and how do we analyze it? How do we deconstruct this? So I bring a lot of speakers and we talk about privilege, power. We talk about race and racism. So I want students to understand how groups, now then I also talk about how marginalized groups exist and how they co-live in the United States, all of the problems that they undergo. So students are really exposed to the social constructs that we really don't talk about it in design classroom, right? And otherwise, most people perhaps might feel uncomfortable because these questions are very tough to answer. So we talk about these things, and then I try my best to create a safe space for students so then they won't feel like they're being judged, right? So there's a lot of honesty that happens, and sometimes there's a lot of hugs that happens, or sometimes students... So without realizing, sometimes there are tears that happens because students, as they acknowledge their implicit biases or microaggressions that they have undergone. So students share. So there is a lot of camaraderie and things like that. But then again, we learn. So again, we do a package that's a three-dimensional kind of package. So students have done typography. Students have sewn things. So it's kind of like almost like it's like a one-time thing. It's not you can't reproduce it as like typical graphic design stuff. So this is more like something where you would see it in an exhibition. So it's like one thing that students create. So that's a project. And also we do, in terms of typography, I ask students to look at their, again, culture and things like that. And then I want them to design type based on their heritage, maybe an object from their culture. And then so then we talk about that object, its relevance and in their culture, and then how we see it as a Western audience, and then try to analyze that and things. So I'm teaching topics again this semester. So I just recently went to China because we have a 3+1 program with this one university called Shanghai Normal University, Tianhua College of Art and Design. So students do a 3 years of design classes there, and then the final year they come here and get a degree at ISU. So I got a chance to teach advanced typography during the summer, and then as I was teaching type, and then the last project was about their identity, I asked students to look at their own identity and then learn something, the project went really great. There were students where like, I did not know all these about my own country. So I'm so grateful we did this project. So now I'm taking the same project and I'm asking our students to do that project. So without stereotyping and marginalization, because there is this huge understanding or misunderstanding about China. So I'm going to present this paper at this, we have at ISU, we have international seminar series. So the director of international studies and programs asked me to present about this, about my research with the Chinese students and also with our own students. So I'm excited, again, really trying to experiment and explore about cultural identities, kind of looking at it from the inside, from like a micro level and macro level, and trying to understand and help students to understand that. And so in the end, it's all about not creating pretty pictures to please someone, but trying to understand what it is, what it takes, what is the power of design. And then in the end, as a human being, how can design help you to be a better human being so you can empathize, understand your audience, right, and understand your client in the end, because most of the students go and do professional work, perhaps work at an ad agency or studios or whatever that they're doing. So they understand their audiences better so they can better connect. So it's all about bridging gaps. So I'm trying my best to do that through graphic design. Again, long answer.
Which is amazing. And I have to ask, have you ever considered packaging your special topics course into a traveling workshop?
I haven't done that. I haven't really done that. I've just gone and presented papers at design conferences, but then I haven't. I want to do a book, so I'm thinking of taking a sabbatical sometime and do a book, but then I would love to do a workshop. I haven't done that. I haven't really written any abstracts or any proposals for a workshop. Maybe if someone gives me an opportunity, who knows, I can do it, right?
Well, for all those listening out there, get in touch and have Archana come to your university and put on a cultural identity workshop. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that. I never thought about it, Neil.
You should. Oh my gosh, people love workshops.
That's true.
And faculty like it when workshops happen in their courses, too.
That's true.
They take up some scheduled time.
That's true.
But very, very relevant to today's society.
Oh, of course, like, isn't it? Yeah, of course.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So yeah. You were the trendsetter 12 years ago.
I don't know about that. That sounds very humbling. But I've also kind of experimented teaching non-designers. Right. So I got a chance to teach. I'm the honors coordinator for our school. So I got a chance to teach non-design students. These are presidential scholars from all parts of campus. So they were about 17 students, psychology, math, English, theater, like, you know, from diverse programs, but and then they had taken art only in elementary school, so really like hardly have any art background. So I collaborated our design students. I teach this one course called Design Streak Studio, where it is it's a pre-professional design course where it introduces students to work with clients directly. So then I kind of collaborated with our Design Streak students along with these honors students. And then we did a project looking at like social, like art and social justice. So the course was called Innovation and Inquiry and Social Justice. So I invited lots of speakers again, and then so we really looked at trying to deconstruct things about racism, privilege, and all these really tough questions. And then we did a project called This is America. And then students, it was a collaborative project, right? So then our design students designed these posters, and then these students generated content. And so we have, right now we have the show at ISU at this one gallery called Rachel Cooper Gallery, and which is in the Women and Gender Studies and Social Work Department. And then I've heard that lots of faculty members bring their students to have like discussions about the exhibit and then use that in their classroom. So it's like it's about 104 posters that cover from floor to ceiling, and it's the entire room is covered with these posters. So, and I think it's very impactful. So it's really asking to build, asking for a better America, right? Or demanding, not even asking, demanding for a better America. It became a student faculty community kind of project where the community members can participate as well and give their thoughts, and those thoughts will be turned into posters and that could be displayed on the wall as well. So really kind of using design as a tool to do something far beyond like beauty. Again, this is beautiful too, right? Because then you become a beautiful person, hopefully. So, but far beyond, right? Far beyond just like the superficial aspect of design, where it's just like, okay, I'm a great designer, I'm going to do all this client work, make millions of dollars. So that's not the true value of design, I feel.
I couldn't agree more. So let's talk a little bit about tenure and promotion.
Okay.
So you went up for promotion at Illinois State University, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And about how long ago was that?
I got my tenure and promotion in 2015. So okay. It's been about 4 years now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I worked very hard for it. Yes.
Well, so at ISU, mm-hmm. is tenure and promotion, are they one thing, or are they separate items that you have to apply and earn?
They're that's one thing, fortunately. So
okay, good.
Yeah, fortunately. So you just kind of you put everything together. So like every year we have to maintain a dossier of like all of the work that you've done in terms of teaching, research, and service. And then you submit that, right? So there is a word count or word limit, but then you submit that. And then the SFSC, that's the School Faculty Status Committee, they review that. So the members of the SFSC get voted to be on that. So it's a privilege serving on the SFSC. So I was lucky to be on the SFSC before my tenure process. So I kind of saw how the documentation is put together. And also, some of the faculty members are really kind. They share their tenure documentation with you. So it's like, so you go through it and be like, huh, maybe I should do this, or maybe I can include that and this and things like that. So the best thing is to document everything. And then, so when time came, I had all of the 5 years of stuff that I had saved. So then that summer, when it was due, I just sat down for 3 months and wrote the whole thing. Again, for a tenure document, there's no word count, right? So perhaps you can write a book, who knows? So it was just so, yeah. So I just wrote it all. So because it had been a very, very long time since graphic design sequence, like anyone from graphic design sequence had gone up for tenure. There was all this new faculty. We had a new director, new dean. So there is always this, a little bit of apprehension, right? So like, okay, so how do I approach this? So then I tried and I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. So then I got lots of supporting letters from people in the community, from clients, from former students, from past professors, and also from people that I met at conferences, like other graphic design professors that I had presented along, and that they had heard about my work through my research paper. So like really getting lots of letters of support. So I did that. So it was an arduous process, but in the end it seemed very rewarding.
I hope so.
It was very rewarding, but I was like, okay, here I submitted, I'm done, right? And then I was like, okay, because at least now we can submit these documents, all of the documents online. Yes. In the sense, like you can put it on save it as a PDF and then go drop off your flash drive or otherwise you can hit submit online, so you can do all that. Back then, 4 years ago, everything was as a binder, right? So I had one 3-inch binder of all of the documentation, right? In the sense, like all of my writing and narrative and all that stuff, and a 5-inch binder for all of the supporting materials. Right. So I could not carry the 5-inch binder and the 3-inch binder at the same time. I could not, because it was so heavy. My poor kid carried one of the binders and came along with me to drop it off because it was that heavy. So I had done a great job of saving stuff. It almost looked like I was a hoarder or something. Yeah, so when I heard the good news, I was like, yes. And I was so done and tired. Yeah, but I haven't taken a sabbatical yet. So our program has undergone a lot of changes. And then we have hired new faculty members. Our program has grown from when I first started ISU, there were only about 45 design students. Now we have 120. We wrote new curriculum. And then I just came to know it. The new curriculum starts from this fall. I just came to know it just with our basic GD1 class. We have 59 students. So that's incredible.
Wow. Congratulations on those numbers.
Thank you. Thank you. And we are really happy. I mean, it's a great time to be at ISU. It's a great time to be teaching design. And I'm fortunate that we have a director who recognizes that, as also a dean who promotes it. So design is getting a lot of attention, and the provost and the president understand that as well, because of course it's about enrollment as well. So So we are really happy. So, yeah.
Always. And with the trend of universities and departments laying off faculty and cutting programs, mm-hmm. it's really refreshing to hear that there is growth.
Yes, yes, yes. But we are working equally hard, though. Yeah, but we just hired a couple new faculty, so we are really excited to have them. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have any advice for those that are going up for tenure and promotion?
I think my advice would be to really document everything, and then start writing early. Understand who you are as a designer. What do you want to say? And what is the difference that you have made within your field? What kind of a researcher are you? How is it contributing to change the world of design through design education or research or service? So whatever that you're doing, really understand who you are and be honest about who you are as a design educator. And then I think that's what the narrative should be. The narrative should be more about who you are as an educator, who you are as a researcher, what have you done, what's your contribution, and then also in terms of service, how are you doing service to your profession, and also service to your community. I think design has design can create so much change to the community, and then I think when we do stuff for the community, it's like the grassroots level that needs change, right? So, and I think it's so important to see who you are and really self-reflect. And I think that's what the narrative should be all about, self-reflection, and show the people, whoever are reading your tenure papers, that you have grown from a junior faculty to so then they can be like, okay, this person has really grown in the past 5 years. And then, so you earn that promotion, you earn that tenure. So then you earn and you become from assistant to an associate professor. You need to earn that title, I think, or that recognition.
So for all the listeners out there, don't let that be intimidating to you.
I'm sorry if I intimidated anyone.
No. And if you have a supportive department, they will help guide you through every step of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I have amazing peers who were... very kind of very, very supportive. They shared their tenure documentation with me. And then so I looked at someone from art education, someone from painting, someone from photography, and someone also from graphic design, even though graphic design, it had been ages since anyone went up for tenure, right? So then, but I still had my colleagues like tenure documentation, look through it, and then kind of understood how to put it together, how to write a narrative, right? And like I said, I was fortunate to be on the SFSC before tenure. So, and I saw how when people came up for promotion, how they wrote and how their narrative was very formal. And I would always suggest that even though your peers are your friends, right? I mean, like all of the faculty members, you know them well. You've been teaching with them for 5 years. But don't take that for granted, because I think out of own self-respect, you really need to invest in your tenure documentation and then write a narrative that's honest and tells who you are, and not take it for granted that, oh, these guys are my friends, I know them, so they, my friends are reading. Yes, of course, it's going to be a friendly team of members who read your documentation, but then I think we need to have a level of professionalism. So I feel like, so take it very seriously and then apply. So I have served on the SFSE in the past 10 years. I've been on the SFSE for 6 years. I know there was a time I went to everyone and I said, please don't vote for me. I need a break. So, but then, yes. Yeah. So hopefully, like I was on the SFSE this year too. So that's what I am looking for. I'm just looking for someone to be honest and authentic, and really want to see them grow as faculty members, and try to communicate and document everything.
Well, thank you for that advice. And we are at the end of our interview.
Great.
Yeah. Are there any upcoming projects you might want to talk about real quick? Or
I mean, my project is like I'm presenting that paper about This is America at this one conference called, I think it's called DEL, Digitally Engaged Learning. I think it's in Texas State in September. So that's something exciting. And then a personal project, because since I teach Design Streak, I'm also a client-based designer who make work for people from various communities, because again, trying to understand that, and I do that in my Design Streak class. So I have all these client projects that we are working on, like branding for this one company that does soya candles. Again, it's a pro bono project and things like that. But my own personal project, I'm currently working on the United States Postal Service. They just put out a stamp 2 years ago for Diwali. Or Deepavali, that's the right way to pronounce. It's a Sanskrit word called a row of lights. That's the festival of lights. And this year it comes in October, because sometimes it comes in October, sometimes it comes in November, because we follow the lunar calendar and it changes. So this time it's in October. So last year I came up with this idea of like, how do I share like my own culture through this card? And then so I kind of came up with the Sanskrit shloka or a verse. This was a phrase actually, and it's called Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. And then the phrase is from this one Upanishad called Maha Upanishad. And then Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam means one world, one family. And I thought it was very important message to share. So I designed that card using Kannada typography. Kannada is a language that I speak at home. So that's my native language. So then and Kannada is very, the script is Brahmi script, which is one of the oldest scripts in ancient India. So it's based from Brahmi script, but Kannada has its own script, and the script is very rounded. So I tried my best to create something very geometric, because I was looking at Indian sweet designs. And then so it was almost like opening a sweet box, but then a sweet box of, like, you know, to bring people together. So that was the idea last year. So this year I'm coming up with something new. I'm looking at a Shanti mantra that's based on peace. Shanti means peace. So in the end, it ends with peace, peace, peace. So I'm looking at a Shanti mantra in Sanskrit, and I'm trying to dissect that mantra, understand it, and then looking at the concept of the mantra that's appropriate to share for Diwali. So a mantra that talks about darkness, and how do we take away darkness from our lives and look at light, because it's the festival of light, right? So you remove the ignorance and darkness and come towards light. That means light means knowledge. So that's what the Shanti mantra is about. So I'm looking at that Shanti mantra, and I'm trying to design a card, again, based on English, with English and Kannada, because we speak Konglish, right? So we speak English and Kannada at the same time. So your brain switches back and forth, because if you're not a native speaker of English. So that's the card that I'm designing. So watch out for that card, Neil. I'm going to send one to you too in October.
Please do. I will be waiting to see that, because it sounds amazing.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for doing this. It was a pleasure talking to you. I feel like I uncovered so many things about myself talking to you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for spending time with me today.
Thanks, Neil.
This concludes Season 2, Episode 5 of Tell It to Neil. If any of the facts or information included in this episode are incorrect, please feel free to get in touch through our email, hello@tellittoneil.com. If you would like to get in touch with Archana, please contact her through her email at ashekar@ilstu.edu.